Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King MOX.
We do roll on as we get into our second hour. Coming up in just a few minutes, we are going to be joined by Joe Sheehan of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. We'll get his thoughts on the World Series, Yankees and Dodgers, and it's not going to start till Friday. We've got a full, it's very weird looking up at the TV monitors here in the studio and not seeing any baseball. Got some 911 Lone Star action going on and some Monday Night Football action going on, but no baseball, which is sad. And here in about two and a half, three weeks, depending on how long the World Series goes, it's just going to be no baseball for a while. Although, this year there is a benefit to that because it feels, the John Jay story notwithstanding, it feels like the major storylines, narratives, talking points for the Cardinals, we've pressed the pause button. Like we can't really advance that story right now until stuff starts to happen. And again, something like today with John Jay might trickle out. The Cardinals, I don't think, will make an announcement on that until I guess they've got a few days leading up to the World Series. So if the Cardinals want to make an announcement, but I would also think that the standalone announcement on John Jay is probably not what they'd want to do. They'd want to announce the entire coaching staff. And unless they've got this whole all locked in, and the Katie Wu report only had one part of it, and Katie's awesome, and she's generally pretty locked in on what's going on, I would suspect that we're not actually going to get confirmation about John Jay until after the World Series, because once we get into the World Series, generally announcements are not made. Major League Baseball just doesn't want that. Occasionally you'll get something on like on an off day of the World Series, but in a perfect world from Major League Baseball's perspective, you hold off on announcements of all teams until after the World Series does come to an end. Throughout the thing earlier where I was asking folks what they thought about John Jay joining the coaching staff, got a text message from the 636, said, I always felt like that John Jay was the last Cardinals leadoff hitter who knew how to do what he was trying to do. Hope he can bring that to the organization. I'll be curious to know what his role is going to be, what his responsibilities are going to be. Because a number of coaches from the staff last year are expected back. And again, this goes to mostly Katie's reporting in The Athletic. And you should subscribe to The Athletic if you have the financial means to do so, because it's awesome. But bench coach Daniel Descalso, pitching coach Dusty Blake, first base coach Debbie Clapp, third base coach Pop Warner, assistant hitting coach Brandon Allen are among the coaches that are expected back next season. Talked earlier, Willie McGee is going to move on from the full-time coaching staff, instead serving as an advisor to the organization. I am hopeful because I look at Willie's skill set being that he is so good working with outfielders. I hope that whether it's coming in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon sometimes and working with guys, or going to various minor league sites and working with some guys on occasion, or being at spring training working with guys. I hope that Willie is not done from a coaching standpoint. When you're an advisor to the organization, that doesn't always mean that there are that there's on field coaching aspects to your job, but that doesn't mean that there can't be. And I just hope that Willie is continuing to do that in some form or fashion with the organization moving forward. So for Jay, obviously played outfield. He can coach outfield, so I think that's going to be part of his responsibilities. Very good base running coach as well. I would think that that's going to be part of what he works on. I would suspect that he is not coaching first base. He was a base coach in Miami. No indications right now that they are looking to change any of the other responsibilities. And with first base coach Stubby Clapp and third base coach Pop Warner all set to return, unless they want to take somebody like Stubby and put some, you know, he's a busy guy. He is a really, really busy guy. He does a lot of the scouting reports where he's working on defensive positioning, and he puts together kind of the cards that the players use on an everyday basis. That is a lot of work for him. So maybe there's a scenario where he moves more into a dugout role and not so much in first base coach. And does John Jay go do that or something else? I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing here. That don't really know anything about anything, but throwing out the different things that could play out. from a Cardinal standpoint, probably the number one talking point storyline here over the last day has been what we saw with Tommy Edman winning the NLCS MVP. And first and foremost, congratulations to him. Like, that's really cool. He had an amazing series and he's had a fantastic playoff run. But I get pretty frustrated about some of the things that I've read, because in no way, shape, or form am I trying to denigrate Tommy Edman. I think Tommy's a really good ball player, and I like his ability to play all over the place. I like the way he plays the game. Like, he is a winning ball player, and I like him a lot. But what has frustrated me a little bit is all of a sudden this overwhelming narrative, whether it's on social media or anywhere else, that the Cardinals got fleeced in the Tommy Edman trade because he won the NLCS MVP. I think at the end of the day, and we'll have to wait and see, I don't know for sure what Eric Fetty's going to do for the Cardinals next year, but Edman is still a very split-heavy player, somebody who, when you look at the right-lefty splits, you know what he's going to do against lefties, but you also know what he might not do against righties, and that played out. And the numbers that he had with the Dodgers after getting there were very similar to his career numbers. It wasn't like he was all of a sudden the superstar. He had a really good NLCS. He had an incredible run, and he's been very good in the playoffs as well. And Dave Roberts has utilized him in a really good way when they, you know, putting him in the cleanup spot, especially against a left-hander like Manaea yesterday. All those things. So I'm legitimately happy for Tommy Edman, but I'm frustrated with the fan reaction that it was a bad trade. That it was a bad trade, and that's what. There are so many people out there that anytime they get an opportunity to take a shot at the decisions that the Cardinals have made, that they're going to do it. And I guess that's just kind of the world that we live in right now. But when that trade was made, even people who hate John Mozeliak were sitting here saying, okay, all right, I'll give it up to him on this one. This was a good deal. You gave up Tommy Edman, who his role on the team wasn't really clearly defined. You know, you already had Brendan Donovan, who kind of does a lot of the same stuff that Tommy Edman does. There wasn't that clear role for him on the team, and they needed starting pitching. And they also needed a guy who could hit lefties, and they got that, and then they fell out of contention, and Tommy Pham went away. That's still kind of the weird thing about that whole move. But even if it's just straight up Edman for Fetty, you got a guy who is should be a top level starting pitcher for you, who is going to be your number two starter behind Sonny Gray, and who you had club control on at a really, really reasonable number. You had that. I know that Fetty's numbers weren't great after the trade. You don't have to remind me of that. I know what they were. But he started to kind of find his way after eventually, you know, after the trade. He did not perform the way he would have liked to immediately after. And with all due respect to Tommy Edman, a number two starting pitcher is more valuable than kind of a utility kind of guy who is really a platoon type player. And that's what Tommy Edman is. And it sounds like I'm denigrating Edman. It sounds like I'm putting him down. I'm not. Like, that's a great role for him, and he can be a winning ball player, and you put him. That's one of the things that sometimes frustrates me about the Cardinals, bluntly. They don't always put the players in the position to succeed. When we talk about other organizations, when we talk about the Tampa Bay Rays, we talk about the Milwaukee Brewers, we just talk about these teams that seemingly get the most out of their players, sometimes it's making the players the best version of themselves by instruction, by tweaking the swing, by using a certain pitch more, or getting rid of a certain pitch. But sometimes it's just putting guys in the right position to succeed. And the Cardinals don't always do that, and they can be better at that. And I think something that the Dodgers have done is they've put Tommy Edman into a position to succeed. And I would, even with Tommy Edman being named the NLCS MVP, if you ask me tomorrow, would I trade Tommy Edman straight up for Eric Fetty? The answer is going to be yes, 100 times out of 100. And 99% of the people agreed with that statement when that trade was made. And then Tommy Edman wins the NLCS MVP, and what happens? Oh, you see it on social media. These same people who probably liked the trade when it happened, they make the decision to, you know, really denigrate the trade and put John Mozeliak down. I liked it. I thought the trade was a good trade, and I will stand by that to this moment. 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Up next, we'll talk with Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. We'll get his thoughts on this World Series that is upcoming. That's next. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. My name is Matt Pauly. We're very happy to be able to welcome back onto the program. He is Joe Sheehan, of course, part of, not just part of, the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, which is 20% off right now. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. Follow him on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. Joe, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
It's 8 o'clock on the first night without baseball in like playoff baseball in like 15, 16 days. So I'm just kind of walking around my apartment. I don't know what I'm doing myself.
Well, I'm glad we can at least talk a little bit of baseball with you to get you out of whatever funk that you're in here at the moment without baseball. And you're going to have this for a few days. I understand the business of baseball on TV and the business of sports on TV, and you got to lock in the World Series dates and everything. So it's not that I'm angry about it, but it's kind of a bummer that we got to go the five straight days without baseball.
And they did make an effort this year. Had both series finished by Saturday. Basically, if the Dodgers had beaten the Mets last week, they would have started the series Tuesday night. They actually did build in to avoid the really long rest. It just happened that it took the Dodgers six games to eliminate the Mets. We will probably see this continue to happen. They'll have basically a schedule and then a contingent schedule so that you don't end up with that full week off. And we'll see what happens. If people get annoyed about that, I have a friend of mine when I told him this, he was like, wait, so people don't know when the first game of the World Series is? I said, well, they know it's one of 2 days. And it's not like the Super Bowl where a whole bunch of people come from out of town to go to it. Like, if you suddenly decide the Super Bowl was going to be on Wednesday, you'd probably have a problem. I don't think this is a negative for too many fans.
Other than just not being able to watch baseball on any given night. The cynics will sit here and say, oh, it's the Yankees and the Dodgers. It's the two big market teams. It's the two big money teams. That's the way Major League Baseball wanted it. Do you have any response to that?
Why were they so bad at doing this last year when it was the Diamondbacks and Rangers, or, you know, the year it was the Cubs and the then Indians, or the year that it was Kansas City and the Giants? I mean, if MLB was rigging it, actually does rig the playoffs, they do a really poor job of rigging the playoffs. The Yankees haven't been in the World Series in 15 years. We haven't had a Yankees-Dodgers series in 43. So I'm going to stop short of profanity here and just say these people should shut up.
And for me, I look at these teams, especially when it came to the Final Four. Yeah, three of those four teams had large payrolls, but they were also teams that did things very smart, that make good decisions, that could get good infrastructure and have lots of smart baseball people in the organization. Money is a part of it, but as we learned with the Mets last year, money doesn't buy you wins. You got to make good decisions with that money.
No, I think the Mets are a great example of a team that has done so much great player development over the last decade. You go back to their last trip to the World Series, and you had that Matt Harvey, Jacob deGrom, Steven Matz, Noah Syndergaard was traded for as a prospect. All of those players were homegrown. You look at this team. Martin Vientos was their best hitter. He's homegrown. You look at Francisco Alvarez. Didn't have a great series, but had a couple of big hits yesterday. You look at Brandon Nimmo. All of these teams, and this is the way it has to work now, you have to build that player development core. You need that group of 5-6 players who are going to give you 15 to 20 wins above replacement and only make $12 million between them. And all of these teams have had that. I mean, yes, I'm not saying these teams don't have high payrolls. I'm saying that in modern baseball, it's not about that high payroll. It's about player development and the core. And of course, the Guardians are an example of a team that doesn't have a high payroll but does have that core. These conversations we're having, Matt, are just very 15 years old. It's like we started having them during when Bud Selig was commissioner and trying to turn baseball into a heaven for small markets. And we haven't stopped having them, even though We have massive amounts of revenue sharing now. We have massive amounts of national revenue. All of the rule changes over the last 15 years at the industry level have gone towards leveling the playing field. But I don't think the conversation has caught up to that.
I would agree with that. I would also hope that the Cardinals fans, which is almost everybody listening to this right now, heard what you just said, because the Cardinals have let it go a little bit from a player self-development standpoint. They're trying to rebuild that now with Heim Bloom. And to your point, if you are not graduating impact players from your minor league system, you do things like sign Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn as Band-Aids. And if everything doesn't go right, you end up missing the playoffs. And almost no matter what, you're not an overly compelling team.
There's a great example, because what the Cardinals used to do is, if you even forget stars, they were really good at bringing along fairly low-profile prospects who would suddenly show up and be 1-3 win players for no money. I think of John Jay as my classic example here. But, you know, all the various second basemen they went through, Clapp and Hart and guys like that, or you think about, you know, what Tommy Edman gave them a couple of, you know, in a few years before the trade. Like, these weren't guys who were top 10 prospects. These weren't guys who were drafted high. Remember, the Cardinals don't draft high, because the Cardinals are never really bad. It's not like they have a top five pick. Even the Dodgers, even the Yankees, even the Red Sox have had these top five, top 10 picks over the last 30 years. The Cardinals really haven't had them. So they're doing all of this without the benefit of not just the high draft pick itself, but the additional money you get to sign players through the godforsaken system that MLB has now in the draft. So if you stop developing those players, you've got obviously a front of roster problem and you have a back of roster problem. And, you know, I think we saw a collapse last year. Everything kind of went wrong in 2023. This year's team basically played to expectations. I think I had them at 85 and 77, maybe 86, and they fell a little bit short of that. And they're going to make a lot of changes now. I mean, I'm a big fan of Heim Bloom, so I think they're on the right track here. But it's not a one-year thing, and you have to be willing to do the 2-3 year rebuild where, you know, Heim got undercut in Boston. You go back to, we're going to hire you to reshape the entire organization, and then 2.5 years in, they fire him. It's like, no, if you're going to say this is a rebuild, you have to commit to the rebuild. You can't get mad because you didn't make the playoffs 2 straight years.
We're talking with Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. I think it's interesting when you look at the two managers that are still alive in the baseball playoffs, because some Dodgers fans have been calling for Roberts to go away. They've won just the World Series in the COVID year. They've underperformed at times. A lot of Yankees fans wanted to see them move on from Boone multiple times over the last few years. Each organization sticks with their guy, and now they're playing against each other in the World Series.
Yeah, playoff baseball is such a different animal from regular season baseball now, more so than it's been previously in baseball history, when you only had one round or two rounds. Now you have 3 rounds, sometimes 4, and it's just there's a stress level that builds up. There's a workload thing that builds up. You see teams putting 4 or 5 guys on their roster that barely played for them the entire season, and it takes a while to get those reps to get better at it. And Roberts is, for me, my favorite example of this. Roberts was someone who would make the big mistake in the playoffs for a long time. And if you look at the team that he, the decisions he's made this year, he simply hasn't done that. He hasn't made the Dodgers more likely to lose a game. I do think to some extent getting the DH in the National League has helped him. Again, it gets him out of some of those sticky decisions about whether to leave a pitcher in or when to go to a reliever, because you're taking the pitcher batting element away from it. So I think he was certainly helped by that. But Roberts' strength has always been 10 p.m. to 7 p.m., by which I mean everything that isn't the stuff we see, the personnel management. He's got a lot of Dusty Baker in him. He's got a lot of Joe Torre in him, which is just he keeps things calm internally. And if the trade-off is he's not Earl Weaver in the dugout, I think it's been worth it for the Dodgers.
Some of these moves, I mean, there's a lot of talk in St. Louis today about Tommy Edman because he's the NLCS MVP. They take the opportunity to put him in the cleanup spot to try to get him a couple at bats against the lefty Manaea. They've done some other things with Edmund since he got there. It feels like the Dodgers, whether it's Roberts making the decision to bat him fourth or whether it's the organization just looking at who he is and how to make him the best version of himself, the Dodgers have done some things with Edmund to really help him out.
Yeah, good managers are always looking at what a player can do and not what a player can't do. Edmund play good defense at a few positions, a much better hitter, obviously, from the right side. He can run the bases. That was a good trade. I, I think the Cardinals did well in that trade as well. I think Fetty's going to help them down the stretch. He'll help them next year. Edmund had not played an inning for the team. He had the wrist injury from hell. So I kind of understand them trying to get something a little more certainty. Plus, the Cardinals have a whole bunch of these middling players on the roster. You look at Brendan Donovan's being squeezed out of his spot. Mason Wynn taking over at shortstop kind of edged Edmund out of the job he might have had. So there were a lot of reasons why I think trading Edmund made sense for the Cardinals. But it's what can this player do for us? The Cardinals, historically, have actually been pretty good at this. Tony La Russa, for all his flaws, was very good at saying, how can this player help me win? I do think Ollie Marmol has some of that. I am encouraged that he's going to get another year here. I think there were some positives this year, and we'll see how that turns out with can he manage a roster that's certainly going to be in transition. But that's a key. And the other thing to look at here is, managing is just so much more about pitching now than it is about hitting. Teams just don't have very many offensive options. Benches are short. They're generally weak. They have a backup catcher on there, a backup infielder. Managers aren't making tactical decisions offensively the way they did for 100 years of baseball history. All it is now is bullpen management. Rodgers has been better at that. Boone has been very good at that since the start. And I think that'll be an interesting subplot to this series. Both guys, good bullpen managers, maybe warrant early in their playoff career, probably not likely to make the big mistake.
Tell our listeners about the Joe Sheehan Baseball newsletter and the deal that you've got going on right now.
Yeah, it's 14 years old now. I was with Prospectus for 13 years and started doing the newsletter in 2010. And I'm as surprised as anybody I've gotten to do it for this long. But we've got thousands of subscribers. If you enjoy reading about baseball, definitely have a stathead perspective. But I love the game. I think that comes through. You can check it out, joesheehan.com. I don't actually have a link to the discount on the chat page. You got to go to Twitter, joe_sheehan. 20% off through the start of the World Series. I guarantee you, you will get your money's worth. Nobody has ever complained to me that they hadn't gotten their money's worth. Some people say I write too much. That's certainly a problem, especially this time of year. But people who get the newsletter seem to love it. You also get access. If you're frustrated with what Twitter has become, there's a Slack workspace attached to the newsletter where subscribers can go and just talk ball. And honestly, it's been going for 7 years now, and people absolutely love it. A lot of KMOX listeners, our listeners are on there as well. So check that out, joesheehan.com, Twitter, joe_sheehan for the discount. And I hope you sign up and join us on the Slack to talk about the World Series.
And Sheehan is spelled Sheehan, just in case anybody can't figure that out. So joe_sheehan. Joe, we always appreciate you being so gracious with your time, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks, Matt. Take care.
Awesome. Very good. That's Joe Sheehan joining us on the program. Again, you can get 20% off his baseball newsletter on the link on Twitter. And his Twitter handle is @Joe_Sheehan. We're going to switch gears. We'll talk some college football. Interesting weekend. Really interesting weekend when it comes to Missouri and Illinois. They both win, but the storyline between the two teams, very different. We'll discuss that next. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you till 8 o'clock, although you might be rid of me from a live perspective at 8 o'clock. But from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, it's going to be Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, and myself for another KMOX Sports Roundtable. We've been doing these on Mondays lately. We might even start doing them more often than not. It's a video show. It's a streaming video show that we do at 12 noon so far on Mondays. Again, that might expand out. It's posted and streamed live to the various KMOX Sports social media channels. So whether it's Twitter or YouTube, I think Instagram, Facebook, all those places, you can watch it live. You can also go back and rewatch it whenever you would like to. But we also have the audio only portion of that, and it's going to be coming up tonight from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So hopefully you will join us for that program. Again, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, and myself for 1 hour. We talk baseball, we talk college football, we talk a little pro football in there as well. So it's all going to be coming up, and you'll hear that beginning after the 8 o'clock news right here on KMOX. Interesting, good weekend of college football locally, as we saw both Missouri and Illinois come up with wins. And the storylines for the two wins and what they really mean to me are very different. In fact, for Missouri, they drop in the rankings with their victory, which is a little bit different. You don't always see that, but Auburn certainly stuck around for a while. Missouri dropped two spots, number 21 in the AP poll. They dropped one spot to number 17 in the coaches poll. Here's what we are always going to remember this game for. I was telling my wife this. I was explaining what happened and just how remarkable it was. Brady Cook gets injured. He goes to the hospital. The game is going on, and this man is at the hospital. And eventually it gets to the point where he realizes he's got 2.5 home games left in his Missouri career. And you can say all you want about Brady Cook. He has not put together the best season this year. But the one thing that you can never question, never, ever, ever question, this dude loves Mizzou. Man, does this guy love the University of Missouri. Man, does he love being a part of the Missouri football program. He leaves the hospital, gets back to the stadium, gets back into the game, and leads them on a winning drive late in the contest for them to find a way to come up with the win on Saturday against Auburn. I mean, this is just 21-17 was the final score. Just one that's movie stuff. That doesn't happen in real life. There's the clock doesn't stop moving. Like, there's only so much time. You go to a hospital, that's going to take a little bit of time. Even if you are an athlete and you've got the express lane into the hospital where you don't have to wait for anything, it still takes time. We know about the traffic around the stadium as a football game is going on. Are you kidding me? Like, it takes time to leave and to get back and for doctors to look at you and for you to be cleared and to get out of there, and you get back. I don't know if this was even answered. Was he still wearing like full football uniform at the hospital? Did he change out of uniform and put it back on? Like, it's such a good story. I love stories like this. And then for him to do what he did at the end of the game. Should have Missouri played a game where they beat Auburn at home by 4, where they were down, where they had to outscore Auburn 15-0 in the fourth quarter to win? Like, clearly, no. They're better than that. And that was not from a take a step back and view the entire game. That was not a good performance by Mizzou. But the story is absolutely fantastic, and it was really cool. It was so cool to see that happen. And you're following along on social media as the game is going on, and there was reports on social media that Brady Cook had been taken into the locker room to get his ankle taped. That was what was being reported by various. And then he's not coming. How much tape does he need? Because it's been like an hour and this guy isn't back out yet. And then he does get back. So that was fun. That was really fun. I said this going into the game that this was kind of, I use the term litmus test game sometimes. And this was going to be that for Missouri, that this was going to be the weekend where maybe we learn who they really are. I'm wrong. It isn't that weekend. You can look at every single game on their schedule, and it feels like it doesn't completely tell the story yet of who they are or where this season is going to end up. And there's only 5 games left in the season. You know, those first 2 games where against Murray State and Buffalo, and they won in one-sided fashion, that didn't tell us anything. And then they didn't play that great against Boston College or Vanderbilt. They win those games. At the moment, Vanderbilt didn't look as good as they actually look now. Maybe that game is the game that you look at as being something. And then Texas A&M, you just get blown out, just get destroyed, and you feel like, well, they're a top 25 team. That's not really who they are. And then they play another PUD team in UMass, and they win by a bunch. So you felt like this was the weekend. This is what we talked about on this show leading up to this game, that, okay, finally this game against Auburn, this is going to be the game where they've got the opportunity to go out and really show who they are. and that doesn't happen. They win. They find a way to win. There's still red flags that are going up. They're dropping in the rankings after the win, but Brady Cook goes to the hospital, comes back, and leads them on a drive like it's a movie, not real life. All right, so that's Missouri. Then you have Illinois. I didn't think Illinois was going to win that game. I didn't. I was hoping they would win. I'm glad they won. They beat Michigan. I did not think that they were going to find a way to win that game. And maybe I'm relying too much on Michigan's name and not their actual talent, because Michigan doesn't have a quarterback. And Illinois very much does have a quarterback in Altmyer, and he's been really, really good this year. But this game wasn't especially close. 21-7, Illinois rolls. And what's going to be interesting now when it comes to Illinois, because Missouri and Illinois could both end up, I think, with two losses. Missouri could win out outside of the game against Alabama coming up, and Illinois could win out except for the game against Oregon. If Missouri wins out, their resume, even as a two-loss SEC team, it's okay. When the college football playoff committee are evaluating those final spots, which will be taken by two-loss teams, what will Missouri really have? What win is going to really show out for them? And Oklahoma and South Carolina still each coming up. Those are tough teams. But neither in the top 25 right now. Arkansas is not going to be an easy game. They should be able to take care of Mississippi State. Mississippi State's terrible. But Mississippi State has given some teams some challenges lately. They just haven't won. When you look at Illinois, not that they have these great wins. They don't. They went to overtime against a Nebraska team that was ranked number 22 at the time. They beat a Kansas team that was ranked 19th at the time. But we all know now that Kansas is terrible this year like they normally are. What are they going to have? If they lose to Oregon, their two losses will be against two likely college football playoff participants in the number one team in the nation in Oregon and a Penn State team that is really, they're putting together one heck of a season, as Penn State is currently undefeated at 6-0 and they're up to number three in the national rankings. Illinois is going to have the better resume than Missouri if they can win out. And again, no guarantee that they are going to win out here. There's still some games that are not going to be super easy for Illinois between now and the end of the season. But if they lose to Oregon and then can find ways to beat Minnesota and Michigan State at home and Rutgers and Northwestern on the road, and of those four games, the Rutgers game on the road is probably the biggest challenge. They should beat Northwestern on the road. Northwestern isn't very good. They should beat Minnesota and Michigan State at home if they play the way they've been playing recently. You're talking about an Illinois team with two losses, and their only losses are to, right now, top three teams in the nation that'll be in the college football playoff. I'm not saying Illinois is a college football playoff team. I don't think they are. I think that number 20 national ranking is appropriate for them at this point. I think Missouri has more talent than Illinois. I think Missouri might be the better team than Illinois, but Illinois is definitely en route to putting together a better resume on the overall season. Again, that's if Missouri and Illinois each finish out the year with two losses. All right, one more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up our baseball conversation for the day and then get you ready for our KMOX Sports Roundtable. That's all coming up. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up, just a few minutes left in the program. Coming up, though, after the 8 o'clock news, you are going to hear a KMOX Sports Roundtable. It is going to feature Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, and myself. We recorded it earlier today, a live video stream that we do on Mondays at noon. The four of us looking at everything going on in the world of sports. And then we replay the audio portion of it during the 8 o'clock hour this evening. So be tuned in for that. That's going to be coming up in just a few minutes. Again, that gets started after the 8 o'clock news here on KMOX. I want to go through some of the other text messages that we got regarding baseball before we do get out of here. We were talking about Tommy Edman. Again, I'm a little frustrated with the revisionist history out there. That was a good trade. The Cardinals pulled off. Everybody thought it was a good trade when it happened. Did the trade completely work out for the Cardinals? Obviously not. They didn't get into the postseason, but they got a legit pitcher, and they got a guy who's under club control at a pretty low number, and they got him for a guy in Tommy Edman who really didn't completely have a defined role on this team, even with what he's been able to do with the Dodgers. Text message from the 256 says about Edman, he's what baseball people used to call a baseball player. I know you know what that means, a player who sees the situation and tries to do what needs to be done at that particular time. The Cardinals seem to have very few of that type of player. In fact, all of baseball seemed to have few. I understand, like, the old school baseball guy. I think Brendan Donovan is that to a certain extent. I think Mason Wynn is that already. I mean, you look at, like, the guy's two-strike approach and the way he plays shortstop. He's still really, really young, but I would put him in that category for sure. But I get the, like, yeah. Do you have those, like, grinders as much in baseball now as you did previously? No. Is Tommy Edman really, the like, that grinder kind of guy? I understand what you're saying. We could probably have a longer conversation on that for sure. Another text message, this from the 256. Huge payroll will not buy you a World Series, but let's be honest here. It will almost always buy you enough wins to get in the playoffs. Not always, but almost always. Yeah, I agree with that for the most part. There are the occasional teams that spend lots of money and it doesn't work out. See last year's New York Mets. But like I always try to tell people, one of the things that frustrates me is when something's going on and somebody uses like an extraordinary event as a reason to do something. That was an anomaly. It was an anomaly. We had that conversation about the Blues last year, 2 years ago. Look at what they did in the Stanley Cup season. You know, they weren't very good, and then they went on this crazy run. Well, you know what? That was kind of a miracle. That's not supposed to happen. When people talk about firing managers in the season, they'll talk about the Philadelphia situation a few years ago where they fire the manager and then they win a World Series. You know what? That stuff doesn't happen very often. So, yeah, I would agree with the texter. More often than not, if you spend gobs and gobs and gobs of money, at the very least, you can be a playoff team. Our KMOX Sports Roundtable, it's on the way next here on KMOX.